Good morning, world. With commentary, no news, this particular time anyway, for the 1st of July, 2005, I'm King David McKenzie. Those of you listening in other countries will, I hope, allow me this indulgence to speak primarily to those who share my citizenship. Although, if you choose to eavesdrop, I believe that you will probably get a few things of import to consider as well. Today starts a long weekend for the Independence Day holiday in the United States, 4th of July, and I have a few thoughts on it, largely borrowed from those voiced 60 years ago by a brilliant radio writer and producer named Norman Corwin, who, as it turns out, is still with us, living in Los Angeles and most recently teaching his craft at the University of Southern California in Los Angeles at an extremely young 95 years of age. His website happens to be normancorwin.com, and I strongly recommend that you check it out as soon as you possibly can. Studs Terkel, himself an American literary treasure on two feet, refers to Corwin as radio's bard, and indeed he was. During the Second World War, he was the most imaginative and breathtaking of writers on radio, a field that was populated by such other titans as Arch Obler, Don Quinn, Freeman Gosden, and Fred Allen. It has been argued successfully that what Michael Jordan did with a basketball or Keith Moon with a drum kit, Norman Corwin did with the English language, making it sing and sparkle in a manner never seen before or since. On the 8th of May 1945, the day the Nazis surrendered their share of the Second World War, Corwin produced a broadcast of his epic poem On a Note of Triumph, with a cast headed up with one of the finest actors of his age, Martin Gable. Such was the public demand for a repeat broadcast, rarely done in those days, that the CBS network had Corwin do just that just 5 days later, and then released the air check recording of the rebroadcast on phonograph record through their Columbia Masterworks label. Among the moments most memorable in Corwin's masterwork is the question from a victorious soldier of the Allied Expeditionary Force. What have we learned from all of this? Corwin's response was, "We've learned out of World War II that we learned nothing out of World War I. We've learned that nations that don't know what they want will get what they don't want. We've learned that if you turn the other cheek to a fascist, you'll get your head blown off. We've learned that a newspaper with a big circulation at home can lie with a straight face 7 days a week and be as filthy and fascist as a street corner handout in 1932 Berlin. We've learned that those most concerned with saving the world from communism usually turn out making the world safe for fascism. We've learned that women can cook, that women can work and fight as well as look pretty and cook. We've learned that the adversaries of democracy came close to winning the first time, even closer the second time, and might damned well win if we give them a third time. We've learned the value of allies in a world where any war is sooner or later a world war. We've learned that some men will fight for power, but that most men will fight to be free. We've learned that freedom isn't something to be won and then forgotten. It must be renewed like soil after yielding good crops. It must be rewound like a faithful clock, exercised like a healthy muscle. Free men who forget that lose their freedom." These are the lessons our sons and brothers have turned to dust to teach us. And whether this victory will stick and the dead not be made fools of depends on whether what we learn is held as close and constant as a catechism. Come summer and prosperity, come winter and the wolf, come ebb tide and come flood. Those words of Norman Corwin's are every bit as relevant today as they were when Martin Gable spoke them into a set of Hollywood microphones almost 60 years ago. Over 60 years ago, I should say. Today, though, the measure of who truly is our adversary must be taken in a slightly different manner. What rights and responsibilities are granted to us in the Constitution of the United States of America? What body of people have told us that they intend to whittle away at those freedoms and responsibilities because they don't like the music that you play, or the ideas that you entertain, or even the manner in which you express your love to your life's partner? What body of people has put itself between the Constitution and your exercising its rights and responsibilities? And what will you do to place that body of people back behind the Constitution instead of in front of it? That is what I concern myself with in this series of netcasts and broadcasts. I hope that you will determine the answers to these questions yourself, and in your own individual manner, act upon those answers in the confidence that what Corwin stated, we learned at the end of our struggle against the Nazis 3 generations ago, will be every bit as true 3 millennia from now. And if we ever forget those lessons, we are merely putting a fatal curse on ourselves and have nobody else to blame. A reminder that this newscast and commentary originates from 3 different locations on the World Wide Web: WhiteRoseSociety.org, RadioForAll.net, and radio.indymedia.org. Please offer these websites, as well as any other online or broadcast station airing this newscast or commentary, whatever possible support you can. Okay? I'll be returning on Tuesday, the 5th of July. You can email me in the meanwhile at thevoiceoflabor@centuritel.net. That's thevoiceoflabor, all one word, at centuritel.net. I'll be seeing you here again Tuesday. I'm King David McKenzie. Remember, fear and God do not inhabit the same space. Now go out and make some news for yourself today. See you later.